Okay, let's move on to 589, please.
589, adopt administrative rules for Chapter 23.10, removing barriers to employment, and authorize the city attorney to enter into an intergovernmental agreement with the Bureau of Labor and Industry not to exceed $25,000.
Okay, our Ban the Box team is here. We can't take action on this today, but we can adopt amendments today, and there are amendments before us. We've already had our hearing, so I will move the amendments that are in front of us as a memorandum. If there's a second.
Second.
And then turn it over to our team here, to Judy Prosper and Rachel Wiggins, to tell us about these amendments, and then we can take action on them if that's the will of the council.
Good morning, council members. Mayor Hales, I'm Judy Prosper, Deputy City Attorney.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. But you've been here for a while.
And we're still about halfway through our agenda, so we'll see you at dinner.
Good afternoon. Okay, so there's just a few changes to this ever-evolving. We've actually received some comment in the last few days. I think the mayor received a letter. You know, we're not going to stop listening to comment, even though the comment period is over. So the first thing is what was discussed last week. We are adding sort of a clause to the – there was a discussion about the $5,000 fine. So in trying to come up with a way that's both a hammer, as the mayor talked about the last time, and not too light, as Commissioner Novick, who's not here but we keep channeling, speaks of, we crafted what we thought was a compromise. So usually the AG can bring what's called a pattern and practice case before BOLI. And how we've crafted it is we've given ourselves, the City of Portland, the authority to bring a pattern and practice case. That was already the case in the drafted contract. But only if the city brings a pattern and practice case would the additional up to $5,000 fine be on the table. So that's a compromise we crafted, and we hope that you'll accept.
So that one says if the city brings an action against an employee who has demonstrated a pattern and practice of violating the ordinance. I didn't understand that in the amendment, that we would find that before. Why wouldn't BOLI be finding that?
Well, we would only bring a case. The City of Portland would only bring a case if we had complaints brought to us that established a pattern and practice. Not just one complainant who would bring their individual case, but if we were aware that a particular employer had a pattern and practice
The complaints are going to BOLI, and BOLI is going to determine whether or not a complaint is valid. So why would the city be in the middle of that, and who would do that?
Yes, ma'am. So the under 659A, there's a clause where the attorney general may bring a pattern and practice case, as we did. And I can't speak to sick leave because I was actually not even here.
Well, another example would be fair housing.
Thank you.
In our fair housing work, the U.S. attorney and the attorney general are in a position where they can bring a pattern and practice.
So my confusion or my concern isn't that they have that language, which I looked at yesterday and thought that was fine. It's that the city would make that finding rather than that BOLI would make that finding?
Well, it's not making a finding. The findings are happening at BOLI. We would bring the case. We would stand in the shoes of a petitioner and bring the case before BOLI because we were aware of an employer who engaged in a pattern and practice of violation.
But we're contracting with BOLI to look into the complaints. This is like sick leave, and indeed we had language like that in sick leave about the pattern and practice. So why is it the city, how are we even involved in looking at the concerns? Aren't we just sending them straight to BOLI?
We can. I mean, there are three ways that cases can come before BOLI under our scheme. The first is a petitioner brings it directly to BOLI. The second is, as under 659A, one of the clauses allows the attorney general of the state to, if the attorney general becomes aware of a pattern in practice, to stand in the place of a petitioner and, as the state, bring a case to BOLI. So just be the petitioner. We are giving ourselves the option, if the city became aware, and I'll give you a scenario where I think this might come up. If one of the advocates came to us, the city, they would have no standing if an organization, let's give an example, like the Urban League, was aware of a pattern in practice. That organization would have no standing to bring a case, but they could give the city that information, and the city could step into the shoes of a petitioner and bring a pattern in practice case. So on behalf of more than one petitioner, is the only way this would happen.
Can I offer a perspective on this? We cannot compel the Bureau of Labor Industries to bring a pattern practice case. We can't compel the Attorney General to bring such a case or the U.S. Attorney. The reason I like this compromise, and I think Judy was like acting as Secretary of State the last few, week or so going back and forth on it. The reason I like this is that in a case where we believe there's egregious repeated action, we are saying the city has the option to serve, to act as a attorney general, which I think is appropriate. That doesn't mean we bring the case. We could have a law firm bring the case. We could partner with the attorney general's office. We could do whatever we want, but we are in the driver's seat. If we are successful in that case, because again, we can't compel Boley or the AG to bring this case, we collect attorney fees, and this gives us a civil remedy. And I think this is rather creative, because for me, it's premature, I think, to change the regulatory system that was set up under state law in terms of Boley's enforcement. If it turns out there's a lot more bad actors than we thought, we can come back and give them more authority than the current law provides. But to give us the option of being essentially an attorney general, seeking relief where we determine that there's a pattern practice, go after a bad actor, have a bigger stick with a up to $5,000 civil penalty, and be able to collect our attorney fees, which the statute provides, I think is actually a creative compromise. And that's why I'm going to support it.
So does this mean that Boley can't do that?
Boley, well, I'm not the expert here, although I practice in the area. We can't tell Boley to do that.
No, but does that mean that if Boley finds that there's a pattern of practice of abuse, that they cannot do that unless the city asks them to?
No, this in no way, this doesn't alter in any way Boley's existing authority. This supplements the statute by giving us this opportunity. But I can tell you, having litigated a lot of these cases, we're contracting with Boley to exercise its best judgment in how they administratively handle these cases. We can't tell them what cases to pursue and what remedies to pursue. So this is just a safety valve which gives us the option to bring such a case if we think there's a pattern in practice and we think a bigger stick is warranted.
But this is an amendment to 3.04.
Yes, to the administrative rules.
So this, in fact, is discounting Commissioner Novick's concern that the penalty under ORS blah, blah, blah is too low. It's saying that only it takes out the Boley commissioner's ability to assess a civil penalty of up to $5,000 and says that only if we say or the attorney general says that there's a pattern of practice can they assess the $5,000.
Let's be clear. It doesn't diminish existing law, so there's no discounting of anything.
It changes the proposal that was before us.
The fine is in addition to the remedies provided under the statute.
And I believe this has been cleared with Steve's office.
The original $5,000, Commissioner Fritz, was in addition to all the Boley penalties that can be assessed, and there are very many of those. For example, there's a civil penalty where the Attorney General brings a case of $1,000 for each violation. There's an amount not to exceed $11,000 under another circumstance. So there are penalties already. Excuse me.
I'm concerned that this puts us in the middle of adjudicating whether or not an employer has demonstrated a pattern or practice of violating the ordinance, because the ordinance says that Boley's going to be responsible for figuring that out. So how would we even take that complaint?
Boley is the adjudicator. We would be a party. So they would ultimately make the decision as to whether there was a pattern in practice. But we would, as I said, I use the Urban League example, where the Urban League could not, if they were aware, nor could they force, as Commissioner Fish said, the Attorney General to bring a pattern in practice case. But if they came to us, to the city attorney's office, and said, we have this evidence of a pattern in practice, this amendment gives us the option to stand in the shoes of a petitioner and bring a case, and gives the $5,000 penalty.
I don't have a problem with that piece.
Okay.
What I have an issue with here is Boley's ability to make and responsibility under the contract to look into, is there a pattern or practice of abuse? We want petitioners to be going to Boley, not to the city attorney's office. That decision was made by the council that we don't want the city attorney enforcing this ordinance, that Boley is going to do that. So it seems to me that this takes away from Boley's ability to.
Commissioner Fritz, this has absolutely no bearing on Boley's authority.
All right.
There's no change in the existing statute.
We can't tell Boley what to do or not do.
It doesn't add to or subtract from their statutory authority, which is a creature of state law, and our contract is just asking them to handle the complaint process. The reason I think this is a plus is that it gives us the option, not doesn't require us, we're not, and I share your concerns about having the city attorney's office become a mini Boley. It gives us the option where there's a serious and repeated level of bad action to be in the position of the attorney general. It allows us in that role to partner with the attorney general and to go forward. It allows us to partner with Boley, but it gives us the right to make that judgment. That's all it does. It doesn't require us. It gives us the option, and I think that is worthy.
With all due respect, it does take away from Boley because it changes what we just said. That I'm going from the perspective of somebody who has implemented the sick time law and worked with Boley, and that if you believe this is better, then I will defer to your judgment.
If I can maybe try to help clarify, we would, in the very much earlier iteration of this, it was the city attorney who would be adjudicating and deciding on whether or not a violation took place. Here we would not be doing that. We don't have the authority to do that. This would be us becoming a party and bringing that.
So how would we know that?
An advocacy group would come to us. They could go to the attorney general and be turned down, for example. Let's say an advocacy group that we partnered with to help write this law said, we have our clients who we believe are being discriminated. We think that this particular employer is conducting a pattern and practice of discrimination. This empowers the city attorney to do some preliminary investigation and bring the case to Boley. Boley would determine everything from whether or not there was sufficient evidence. They would go through their whole process.
When does Boley decide whether there's a pattern and practice of abuse?
Boley would have to decide. They always will decide. Usually there'll be one petitioner at a time, and they'll decide on an individual basis. If they find that there's a pattern and practice, they can levy higher fines or do whatever they wish.
Where does it say that? Without us asking them to.
Without us asking them to. So throughout 659A, beginning with 820 to 865, it goes through the whole complaint process. So 820 talks about who can bring a complaint, any person claiming to be aggrieved. But it does not allow for sort of this pattern and practice. That's where the statute gives in 825 the attorney general the authority to do so. So Boley is not in the business of pattern and practice. The attorney general would step in if there was a pattern and practice.
Can I give you another example?
Please.
The city has been doing fair housing testing. Armed with the results of our tests, we have the option currently to go to the U.S. attorney, the attorney general, or Boley and say, we want you to bring up a big lawsuit under this. They have the right to say, not interested. This doesn't take away, add, or subtract. It just allows the city, if there's an egregious circumstance, to be a party. And I see no harm in giving us that option because it doesn't come at the expense of anyone else's jurisdiction. And that's a fact. We can argue it back and forth, but it's a fact.
Does Boley have the authority to do a pattern of practice?
Boley does not have the authority. The attorney general has the authority to be the party who brings a pattern in practice case. We would be an additional entity that could bring a pattern in practice case under this amendment.
Ben's going to try to.
If I might, this seems to fill a gap. And I'm sorry, I kept coming up there. Why don't I step over because I'm getting reverb on the mic here.
Audio squeal.
Okay, but we did see your PowerPoint.
It's here, I promise. Ben Walters, City Attorney's Office. So what this amendment does is fill a gap in that under the, as has been described, Boley itself does not have a pattern and practice authority. That's given to the AG under the statute. Our intergovernmental agreement is with Boley. It's not with the AG's office. And so in order for there to be a pattern in practice enforcement of our ordinance, the AG would have to step in and say, we will take that on. They might not. They do tend to work off of a model where if they're doing work for an agency, they bill the agency. There is no mechanism within the IGA as it's currently established for us to pay for that.
With all due respect, I understand that. 3.041, right before the amendment, says that the BOLI commissioner may assess a civil penalty of $5,000. Under the amendment, that will no longer be the case.
Unless the city of Portland was the petitioner.
Under this narrow circumstance, and that was to address Commissioner Novick's concern that this gave too much authority.
No, that was Commissioner Fisher.
All right, sorry.
This is designed to balance Commissioner Novick's desire to have a bigger stick with mine to make sure that we have a role in the discretionary process of deciding whether a bigger stick is necessary, absent any experience under this particular new law. And as I said, at some point in the future, if we're seeing rampant violations of the law, I think it's perfectly appropriate for the council to consider giving BOLI additional statutory remedies. But I don't think at this point it makes sense for us to change state law in terms of what are the remedies for violations of these kinds of ordinances.
All right. Let's move on to the Second Amendment, which is the criminal history matrix and the concern that Commissioner Saltzman had about attempts.
Yes. So we have also just a slight amendment to the criminal history matrix, which came through a comment that we were very happy to receive, to include, as we discussed last week, attempts, which brings down a felony to the lesser. So if it was an A felony, it brings it down to B, to also add criminal conspiracy and solicitation. Solicitation, like attempts, bring it down one level, so from A to a B, B to a C, and criminal conspiracy maintains the crime at the current felony level that it is. So we wanted to add those to be clear that, for example, in a category B, I'll choose aggravated theft 1, ORS 164.057. The solicitation of that would also be a crime that you could use the matrix for, and the solicitation or attempt of that would also be a crime that you could use the matrix to eliminate a candidate.
Do you recommend those changes?
I do recommend the changes. And just to be clear, category C is not affected because if a category C, and I can't remember the last, so if it's a D felony and it would be reduced to a misdemeanor under an attempt or solicitation, that might go against the very policy we're trying to establish here, bringing down drug crimes to the misdemeanor level.
All right. Other questions? Thank you both. Unless Rachel, you want something to add?
Just one for the group. Procedurally, there is a need for an emergency clause on this item. Unfortunately, because it needs to be carried over next week, we run the risk of having an ordinance in effect that has administrative laws that are not. So I don't know if that's something to be added now or next week, but that is something
we have
for
a full
council
next week. No, next
we have
week.
Minus four people.
All 4 people next week.
We can't add an emergency clause without four.
Right. I think we can't do that till next week.
Right. I just wanted to make people aware.
I'd be happy to support emergency clause.
We'll remind you.
All right. Now, I don't believe we have to take testimony on the amendments, but I'll offer that opportunity just in case. Does anyone want to speak on these amendments, just on the amendments?
Thank you.
Okay. Nice work, Judy.
If not, then let's take a vote, please, to adopt the amendments, and then it will come back next week on regular calendar, and the emergency ordinance could be, emergency clause could be added if that's what council chooses. So roll call on the amendments, please.
I want to thank staff for the work they did engaging council in really these technical finish line considerations. And I think you came up, Judy, with an elegant compromise solution. And thank you. Aye.
I would have preferred to have given BOLI more authority and more ability to impose significant penalties. However, in order for this amendment to pass, it has to have 3 votes. So I vote aye.
I want to thank Commissioner Fish and all of my colleagues, even the ones that aren't here, who suggested improvements to this ordinance. And I want to thank you, Judy and Rachel, for your continued stewardship of this very good thing that Portland is doing. Aye. Okay, let's move on, please, to item number 5.